When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
You know what that music means. Welcome in to a very special edition of UAP, the Unidentified Alien Podcast. I am Stephen Diener. Over there is Karen Curtis. How are you, Karen?
When the moon hits you, I like a big pizza pie. That's somebody.
You know it's going to be good when we start off with Karen singing, because it's all about the moon.
Oh, goodness.
And I say it's a special edition for two reasons. Number one, welcome to season three.
Oh my gosh, really already?
Yes, we just move right along here on UAP. That is the first episode of season three, but we're starting off with a bang here. Not only is it the start of season three, but it is a two-parter.
Yep.
To start off the new season.
Well, you got to give the moon two parts.
Yes, there's so much. And we were going to try to fit everything about the moon, secret history of the moon, all the stories.
You wouldn't believe it. We wouldn't be able to survive without the moon here on Earth.
That's true. But there's so much to talk about when it comes to the different testimonies and the stories and the accusations about the moon and the Apollo missions and all these different things that there was no way we could fit it into one episode, so we're going to split it up.
A lot of unanswered questions about the moon. I'm surprised. We've been there, seven times?
Yeah, about that, right? So we're going to get into all of it here today and next week on part two, so stick around. It's going to be a lot of fun. But before we get into some of these stories about the moon, Karen, you have our fun fact, right? We always start off with a fun fact.
That's right. I have a factoid about the moon. Scientists are convinced that a near-Earth asteroid may be a piece of the moon.
Oh.
It's the size of a Ferris wheel.
It's pretty decent.
It's a space rock, and it comes past Earth every April. Huh. And it's called Kamalewa.
Wow. Sounds Hawaiian.
It does, right?
Yeah.
Astronomers at the University of Arizona noticed this asteroid, and it had similar properties to the moon and the moon rocks brought back from NASA's Apollo missions, which we're going to get into.
Mm-hmm.
Scientists published their findings after 5 years of data collection, and how that asteroid may have broken off from the moon. Who broke the moon? In the first place remains a mystery. So we start out with a fact and a mystery.
That's right. And that's actually a good segue, because there's a lot of mystery. You would think the moon is just, you know, all right, it's that big rock up there. It, you know, does all the things with the gravitational pull. And without it,
we wouldn't have tides. It'd be bad.
Yeah.
How far away from the Earth is the moon?
I want to say it is 238,900 miles, is that right?
Yes.
All right.
Ding, 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 ding.
What a guess.
So, comparatively speaking, the ISS is, 200 miles above our head, 240?
Yeah.
So the moon is far, far away, and supposedly we've been there.
Yes, that's don't doubt the moon landing to Buzz Aldrin's face, because he will punch you.
I'm just going to punch you in the face.
And I think I mentioned that in our last episode when we teased the moon. I am going to have the video of Buzz Aldrin punching a conspiracy theorist in the face who confronted him about the moon landing being fake.
Can you imagine if you went all the way to the moon, 238,900 miles, and someone said, no, you didn't.
Right. My gosh. So a lot to get to there. We do have a lot to get to on the Apollo missions, but that'll be in part two. Part one, we're starting off with some interesting things, right, Karen?
Yeah.
With Ken Johnson in the 1960s?
Well, what happened was that there's some questions about the moon, and some of them are, why don't we have any high-res photos of them?
Yes, good question.
Of the moon, rather. The Russians have been there.
Right.
We've been there.
Right.
There's questions whether or not the Anunnakis, you remember them, they were back during the ancient Sumerians and Babylonians.
Yeah, we talked about them in our
visited there?
Ancient Alien series. Maybe they did go there.
Why did the Apollo missions end? Remember, they went there from the 60s and early 70s, and then they stopped.
It's a great question.
Russia went there, and why didn't we colonize it? There's so many weird and strange questions about the moon. So in the 1960s, Ken Johnston was the NASA test pilot, and he was the director of data and photo control department.
Mm.
The data and photo control department of the Johnson Space Center in Houston, and he inspected photos brought back from the moon by the astronauts.
Right.
They took like Polaroids or how that worked, but they're not high res. And we had equipment back then that they could use.
Yes.
But
that's right.
For some weird reason. So here's Kent Johnston about the photos.
In my opinion, that is not a natural structure. It's got to be some intelligent species that created it.
He says the astronauts came back with some incredible photos.
I was in kind of shock. And some of the craters would actually show domes and actual bases.
He took the images to his boss and he said, hey, what's with these domes? Are they bases on the moon? And he said his boss told him to make the photos disappear.
And we argued a little bit. He finally said, I don't care what you do, just get rid of those pictures that were taken.
How do you like that?
sounds like stuff today. Oh,
just get rid of it.
Yeah.
So Ken Johnston, I mean, he's not the only person. We're going to have a lot of testimony like that here during these two parts of people talking about.
And we'll put the photo up at our website, 850WFTL.com,
yes,
under the UAP blog post of these structures.
Mm-hmm.
First, he says they look like they were made by some sort of intelligent life. And then he's asking his boss, well, what are these? And he's like, make this photo disappear. And it's like, whoa.
So, yeah, a lot of testimonies like that, you know, that you're going to hear. And it's just, you're going to be really, if you come into this as a skeptic, by the end of it, you may leave thinking, wait, all of these high-ranking officials are talking about the same thing, seeing these structures on the moon, trying to explain that stuff away. It's impossible. Like, how are there structures on the moon?
That's right. And, you know, these images show possibly that there was another civilization that landed on the moon. Maybe the Anunnakis.
Yes.
Or, you know, this would be other than the NASA astronauts. We had the Russians up there. So What about the photographic evidence of the moon bases? They asked this astrophotographer, Andrew McCarthy.
Really does look like something artificial at first glance. When an impact happens, ejecta is flung everywhere. Some of it is flung straight up and comes straight back down. And it creates these irregular piles in the middle of the crater that you see here. Frankly, if it wasn't there, that would be weird.
So
his hypothesis is that basically the domes are created naturally by, you know, asteroids,
yes,
creating craters and
something hitting it.
It comes, you know, all the residue and debris comes straight back down and creates that dome-looking structure.
Right.
Which is possible. I mean, right, it's one or the other. But then again, if you go with Ken Johnston's account, why is his boss telling him get rid of the photos?
That's right.
If it's just from, you know, impact craters?
I don't know. I mean, the moon is full of craters, right? Next, the Mars mission planner, Jonathan Hill, he took the photos and he took a look at the strange vehicle tracks on them. Now, you can get these similar tracks on the moon from like a boulder rolling across.
Right.
Which I don't know if that would be some creature rolling the boulder, but they wouldn't be in parallel lines.
Yeah, that's
like,
true too.
Like these tracks. And remember, the Soviets had a wheeled vehicle up on the moon as well in the 70s. I think they had it before us.
Okay.
So, but Jonathan Hill, he is the Mars mission planner, he says that this is weird because the tracks are parallel. So
my first thought was the lunar rovers driven by the Apollo astronauts.
But images from the Apollo landing sites don't show that.
The United States was not the only country that sent wheeled vehicles to the moon. They look very, very similar to those two parallel line tracks we saw before. But we still can't quite prove definitively that that's what caused these particular set of double tracks.
So we have what seems to be vehicle tracks on the moon. We have what looks to be domes on the moon.
Yeah.
Structures. So what is it? I mean, what was it? you know, Apollo vehicles? Was it Russian moon vehicles? Are these domes really just from impact craters? These are all questions that have not been answered.
No.
But the fact of the matter is, Karen, these things are being seen through photographs, low-res photographs. Again, we don't see any high-res photographs of the moon, even though we've had that technology for 60 years, and they haven't showed us anything.
It doesn't make sense, right?
Yeah, well.
Shouldn't it send a time photographer up there?
Right.
Anyway, so, and is the moon solid? You know, that's another question.
Right.
Is it hollow? Is it solid? Is it made of cheese? Is it all sticky?
That might sound like a crazy thing to ask, but, well, there's some people who have different theories on that.
And some people say they've seen lights on the moon.
Right.
What's that about?
Well, you know, the lights could be, as far as theories go, lights from, you know, the different bases. You know, structures and things like that on the moon.
Maybe the astronauts forgot to turn the lights off when they left.
And it could be.
And put the alarm on.
But it is. I mean, look, there's been reports of all that stuff. And like you said, we've only ever seen one side, too. I mean, there's so much.
That's the weirdest thing.
Yes.
And no one can tell me why we only see the one side and not the dark side of the moon. It just continues to follow us around on Earth without spinning. That's weird.
There's no spin to the moon, right? It just kind of moves in that stationary space. But, you know, the Chinese actually have a probe on the dark side of the moon
right now.
And we haven't really seen any pictures from that yet either, have we? Unless I'm not aware of it.
Well, I think that Pink Floyd had a whole album about it, but that's all we know.
That's a different story. I don't know. It's...
Well, we do have one guy that his name is Ingo Swann.
He's
a remote viewer. And he wrote a book. He had to sign. Okay, so the CIA paid him to be a remote viewer and go to the moon and view what he saw on the moon. He saw people up there. He saw all kinds of stuff. All right. They were partying. And so then they made him sign a 10-year non-disclosure agreement. Then after the 10 years, he started forgetting about stuff. So he wrote it all down. And they said, oh, that would be a good book. So the book's called Penetration and it's available. But he explains what it was like when he was a remote viewer up on the moon.
In this remote viewing sessions, viewed some things on the moon that I thought were really outrageously strange, like people there and big structures and lots of activity and things like that. It started in 75 and went into 1976. But the whole series of events that took place because of this sort of innocent remote viewing of the moon really were, to me, quite shocking. And I was glad to forget about the whole thing until in about 1990, 91, I realized I was starting to forget certain aspects of it, so I wrote it all down. And that led, and my literary agent then said, oh, this is going to make a great book. And when she tried to sell it, nobody would pick it up and publish it.
Imagine that.
Because it contains several concepts that are very embarrassing, I think, to, well, the mainstream powers that be.
So what was so embarrassing, I guess?
Exactly, right?
Was it just the fact that there were things that we're going to uncover that the government has been lying? Exactly what's up on the moon? Why did we stop the Apollo missions? Were some of those questions, would we have looked weak because there's different civilizations, alien civilizations who already have colonized the moon? Is that what would be embarrassing? So again, just a little background on Ingo Swann, like Karen was saying, he's a remote viewer. Not only that, but he's considered the father of remote viewing.
Oh, okay.
And this is a guy who basically started a program at Stanford, I want to say, and started studying what the possibilities were of remote viewing. Actually, remember the movie The Men Who Stare at Goats?
Yeah,
Project
George Clooney.
Right. Project Pegasus was something that Ingo Swann started. The Men Who Stare at Goats is based off of Ingo Swann and Project Pegasus.
They're able to sit in a room and travel mentally to the moon. Or to the Soviet Union.
Exactly.
Look at the enemies, whatever. They can go anywhere where they want with their mind.
And that's how it started with Ingo Swann when it came to him working with the government. Because
what a great
name. It is. What came to him is that the CIA caught on to what he was doing and thought, hey, well, look, if this is actually working, let's go ahead and use you to spy on the Soviet Union and our other enemies to
right.
see what they're doing.
Why don't we use you on Earth?
Yeah. And then the moon stuff came later on with a man, by the way, named Axel Rod.
No.
Yes. Obviously a code name, but the man named Axel Rod came to Ingo Swann and said, hey,
A-Rod.
We need you to look at the moon.
So he does explain what was so embarrassing. I have that here.
We've been taught many years that the moon was a dead place. There was no water, no air, no nothing, you know. I saw air there, at least.
I saw air.
I think I commented on water on the moon, but it's only in the last 2 years that science has finally admitted that there is water and an atmosphere on the moon. But back in the 60s, this was denied. You know, everybody was taught to believe that it was a dead, airless satellite of Earth. And then even some of the NASA scientific missions there sort of discovered a number of things, like analysis of moon rocks suggests that they're about at least a half a billion years older than Earth is itself. So there is, if that would be true, and they think that that is true, then there's a question where the moon came from, and it's not it would not be a natural satellite of Earth. And then the density of the moon is far less than would be expected if it was a solid satellite. So that means that it's probably got a lot of hollow cavities in it. And even Carl Sagan printed a statement way back when that a natural satellite cannot be hollow. And if the satellite's hollow, that means it's not natural. And no real scientist said it's a created or man-made type of thing, but that's a direct implication there.
Unpack that, Stephen.
How do you like that? So, first, let's go back to how the moon got there.
Well,
right?
And that's really interesting because he says that the moon is, according to the stuff they brought back, the rocks, is billions of years older than the Earth, but there was this giant impact hypothesis called the Big Splash. It's the Theia impact, which suggests that the moon formed from the ejection of a collision between the proto-Earth and a Mars-sized planet about 4.5 billion years ago. And that planet was called Theia.
Okay.
And it hit the Earth and it knocked the piece of the moon, and the moon, or all these pieces, gathered and made the moon. Well, that can't be right.
I mean, it's that sounds like a crazy theory, and it's on its own, really. I mean, you talk about all the stuff we talk about, and we sound crazy sometimes. That theory from scientists sounds crazy to me.
Well, it's the only one they can come up with. How did the moon form? Did someone make it? That's what he's saying.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the question right now, right? I never really thought about questioning, was the moon some type of man-made, so to speak, structure, or from an advanced civilization, whatever it might be. But when you talk about a guy who, you know, was considered to be the father of remote viewing, and we've talked about remote viewers before on this show in previous episodes, I mean, it has to make you think a little bit. I know it sounds crazy to think that, well, the moon may not be, you know, a natural formation. And he starts talking about there might be hollow caverns, which we're going to get into in part two as well.
There's oxygen up there. So there's some facts about the moon, Stephen, that the dark side of the moon, really both sides of the moon, see the same amount of sunlight. However, only one side faces us.
Right.
And we were talking about that, and it makes me bend spoons with my mind.
I know.
I don't understand why we only see the one side of the moon. And this guy, Ingo Swann, explains why.
There may be a final answer to this question that you've posed, but I don't think there is one. I don't think anybody knows exactly why that happens, why the moon keeps one side always to Earth. That's one of the phenomena of the moon that I made an effort to find out what the answer was, and it seems like there isn't an answer yet, so I don't have one either.
If he doesn't have one, this is the guy who's looking at the moon and seeing structures and seeing all these different things.
So one side of the moon, the same side, always faces Earth. So the side facing away from the Earth has only been seen by the human eye from a spacecraft.
Right.
And you say the Chinese have something over there.
Yeah, the Chinese do have a probe on the dark side of the moon, and we haven't heard much about it.
That'd
but
be kind of cool.
Have it there.
I've seen the dark side of the moon.
Yeah, exactly. Man, look, maybe it's exactly like the front, the light side of the moon, you know?
Well, I don't know. And then the tides are caused by the moon, of course. There are two bulges on the Earth due to the gravitational pull of the moon.
Right.
It exerts pull. And the side facing the moon, and the other is in the opposite side that faces away from the moon.
Mm-hmm.
So the bulges move around the oceans as the Earth rotates, and it causes the high and low tides around the globe, which you can set your watch to.
Now, if you want to get philosophical, you can say that this is all just the intelligent design of God.
It's so smart. It is so smart.
I mean, if you want to, you know,
thank
take that route,
the
then
moon.
Sure.
And if for us to have another Earth, you know, another planet like Earth somewhere else in the whole galaxy, in the whole solar system, in the whole universe, you'd need to have the similar situation with the moon.
Right. It's true.
So they look for planets that are about the same distance from their suns, mm-hmm. with possibility of a moon.
Right, right.
When they look for life on other, what do they call those? The Goldilocks planets?
Yeah, when they try to find a planet that might have life.
Right.
Some type of life, maybe not, you know, humanoids like Earth or whatever, but some type of life. And all this stuff kind of, it's so intriguing.
It
you
is.
Know?
And the moon is drifting away from the Earth. Did you
know
that?
Not good.
Oh, no.
No, come back, moon.
Come back, moon. It's only drifting 3.8 centimeters away from our planet each year.
By the way, if you want to take a look at some of the things we were talking about earlier, the moon structures that we're seeing in those pictures, or the Buzz Aldrin video where he punches the guy in the face, you can go to 850WFTL.com, search out UAP on the podcast page, or you can just search UAP on the website. And you can, you know, look at the UAP blog. All the episodes are there. Everything that we talked about in this episode and previous episodes, you catch up on them if you want. It's all good stuff there.
It really is. The one thing I like about the moon, Stephen, is that you weigh much less on the moon.
Oh, that is also a good thing. Yeah.
You can go back to your birth weight. No. I think that it's due to its smaller mass, so you weigh about 1/6 of your weight that you weigh on Earth.
That is
fascinating. That's why lunar astronauts can leap around and bound into the air. That's kind of fun, right?
And some other fun facts about the moon. It's only been walked on by 12 people.
Really?
And they've all been American men. The first man, of course, was Neil Armstrong in 1969,
so
the Apollo 11 mission.
So the Soviets send a rover, but no men.
Right. So that was the difference there. And supposedly, we're supposed to be going back to the moon at some point in the next few years.
Yes.
So my question is, and this is something that I was kind of thinking about going into this episode, we stopped going, right?
Right. Why?
That's always been one of the biggest questions. I think the last mission was 1972, Apollo 17. And since then, the moon's only been visited by unmanned vehicles. Of course, all the lunar probes and everything that we send out, you know, that we send up there since 1972. But the question has always been, why did we stop going? Now, the easy answer is funding. Okay, if you don't want to go any conspiracy theory routes or anything sinister, then you can just say it's money.
They started the shuttle program, which was very expensive.
Right. So maybe that's the case. Or if you do want to go the other route, you can say it's because there was some type of deal struck. Maybe whoever's in those supposed structures on the moon didn't want us coming anymore. So my question to you, Karen, is once we go back, because by the time we go back, it's going to be over 50 years since we went to the moon.
Right.
So does that mean we're going to get some type of disclosure at that point now that we're going to be going back?
And our technology is just so much further along.
Oh, forget it.
We have more power in our cell phones than they had in the whole Apollo spacecraft.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. And they, you can't tell me, again, in the 1960s, this is a known fact, they had, and you'll hear from people in this episode and in also next week's episode on part two of the moon, who talk about the technology, the satellite technology that the U.S. government had already in the 60s, where they could read someone's license plate from space.
Oh, wow.
So why have we not, even with the lunar modules that have gone up there and the, you know, the rovers in the past, say, 20 years, why have we not seen a high resolution picture?
Or why is it not on Google Maps?
Yeah, something. I mean, I don't know.
I don't get it.
But hey, look, this is why we do the show.
And
all these questions.
There's moonquakes, by the way. They occur several kilometers beneath the surface, causing ruptures and cracks. And scientists think the moon has a molten core like the Earth. It's not hollow. So we don't know.
And
we have no idea.
And what they also say about the moon, Karen, some other weird things you wouldn't think of, has no atmosphere. So
well,
that
it has
would
a little bit of an
little bit.
It has an exoatmosphere. What is it called? An exoatmosphere?
I think so. So if there is nothing like that, that means the moon does not have a surface that is protected from cosmic rays.
Right.
Right? So that's no fun.
Right.
You'll have meteorites and solar winds and huge temperature variations, of course. And the lack of atmosphere also means that no sound can be heard on the moon.
Oh.
And the sky always appears black because you're just looking out into space.
Right.
So, and if you
because Carl Sagan can explain why our sky's blue.
Well, yeah, there you go. That's why he was Carl Sagan.
That's right.
And I don't know if you saw the movie Ad Astra with
yes.
Brad Pitt. Kind of a crazy movie, but it was interesting. And there was one scene where they're having like this gunfight on the moon, but there's no sound.
Sound, right.
So they kind of made that true to life. If there was a gunfight on the moon and explosions, there would be nothing.
Here's our podcast on the moon.
Just silence.
So in 1950, in the 50s, the USA, of course we did. We wanted to detonate a nuclear bomb on the moon. You know, that's what we like to do.
Not?
We just like to destroy everything. But we didn't, thank God. Can you imagine? Say, hey, let's see what this will do on the moon.
And the aliens would have been very upset.
Then we blow up the moon and, yeah, well, that's why the aliens come here to check out, make sure we don't blow up the moon.
Right. Well, you don't want that.
Those dumb humans are going to blow the moon up. You got to send George over there.
Unbelievable.
My God.
But yeah, when you go back to, and think about with Ingalls Swan and everything that he says that he saw, again, this is a guy, known fact, who worked for the U.S. government. Did
they
a lot of
paid him.
They paid him, yes. Did a lot of remote viewing.
For the CIA.
And it's, I mean, remote viewing in itself is a fascinating aspect because you talk about a technique, a psychic technique, I guess you could say, that allows you to go into this altered state of consciousness to look out at something else. And what they did for Ingo Moon was they would give Ingo Swan, they would give him, saying Moon too much, coordinates. And they actually, there was one time where they gave him coordinates for Jupiter, but he didn't
really
know what he was looking at.
Oh, so they just sent him the coordinates and that's interesting.
And then he did it and he was describing Jupiter. He described all these, you know, ice crystals in the air and that was kind of what looked like rings around Jupiter. And at that point, when
he see Thor Majestic? What's his name?
No, nothing like that. Valiant Thor.
Valiant Thor.
He was in Venus.
He was in Venus.
Yes. If you have no idea what we're talking about, just go back to Alien Agents in the Government. You can learn about Valiant Thor in one of our previous episodes. Fascinating stuff. And that was in season two. So, but he talked about describing the surface and the air surrounding Jupiter. And then he talked about rings that were around Jupiter. And at that point, when he was doing the remote viewing, there was no such mention of rings. So they're like, what's this guy talking about? Well, a few years later, NASA discovers that Jupiter does, in fact, have rings, not like Saturn, where they're so big and visible. But there's no way for him to know that. It wasn't even discovered by NASA yet.
That's so cool.
So this is a guy that look, hey, they gave him coordinates. You go look. And that was that's what he did. It's amazing.
It is amazing. Yeah. You have to. I think I'm going to go to Denny's and get my moons over my hammy now because I'm just totally mooned up.
Starting to get a little hungry.
Yeah. But next week, what are we doing?
So next week, and this is, my gosh, when you talk about some of this stuff that we just talked about here with Ingo Swan and Axelrod, okay? Oh, wait a minute. Before I get to next week, I forgot one bit from Axelrod.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this guy's name is Axelrod. How can I not talk about him more? He talked about taking Ingo Swan on a flight to an unknown northerly destination. Now, deduced by Ingo Swan, of course, as a remote viewer, he guessed it was somewhere in Alaska. When they were there, along with them, they took two twin bodyguards, Ingo Swan called them, and Axelrod and Swan attempted to secretly watch what they called a recurrent UFO appear over this undisclosed location in Alaska and suck up the water from the lake. Now, why is that important? Because remember, we've talked about before, Karen, USOs.
Right.
Unidentified Submerged Objects. That was in another episode that we did previously that you can find at 850WFTL.com and on Apple and Spotify, wherever you get this podcast. And so that would go to that theory about USOs being underwater, maybe using something, water as fuel, whatever it might be. Now, Axelrod discloses then to Swan, according to Ingo Swan in his account, that the silent growing oscillating triangle, again the triangle UFOs are back,
right,
are simultaneously scanning the area and eliminating any animals in the area. that the silent beams he talked about that were emanating from the triangular object, that they were blasting deer or porcupines from the woods.
Oh my gosh, why?
Just clearing it out.
Oh.
And then he talks about the twin bodyguards who came to the attention that they've been discovered by the UFOs, and then the group was attacked. Again, this is according to Ingo Swann's account of what happened. They were attacked by the UFO. Swann says that he was thrown to safety by his colleagues and sustained only minor injuries. So this guy has some pretty fantastical stories. Again, you're talking about a guy.
And who's Axelrod?
Axelrod was one name. Axel, last name Rod.
Like Axel Rose.
No, not like that. He's basically the government agent, the secret government agent who would talk to Ingo Swann and have him do all these.
So he's the guy that got him to do the remote viewing.
Right.
And, okay.
All the remote viewing.
Got him
viewing.
On the payroll.
Yeah.
Got it.
The experiments. And basically, he kind of became like his government guide,
got
so
it.
To speak. His go-to guy.
His handler.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And apparently, in this one time, they ended up going to Alaska to do some type of viewing of these triangular UFOs, and things got a little wild.
I see.
Yes.
That's crazy.
So this guy, Ingo Swann, had a pretty interesting life, especially when you're talking about being the father of remote viewing and basically coming up with the technique himself and seeing Jupiter and all these things on the moon.
And his book, one of the books, he has many, but one of them is called Penetration. That's his when he went to the moon and he viewed what he saw on the moon, if you want to read that.
Yes. It's basically an autobiography that came out in 1998 and talks about all that stuff, and even talks about how he came into contact with a scantily clad female alien in a Los Angeles supermarket.
Really? They have gender?
That's what he says. He concluded that extraterrestrials...
It was Angelina Jolie.
Maybe. He concludes that extraterrestrials are living on Earth in humanoid bodies, so kind of like...
I believe that.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's been talked about before. When they say, reptilians, so to speak, are dressed as humans. You've seen that in shows like V, I think it was called. That was a couple of iterations of that show in the early 2000s and in the 80s. Even they live, I think.
Right.
With Roddy Piper back in the 80s. That movie was pretty wild. So
my favorite Martian.
Yes.
E.T.
So all those different things that talk about, aliens looking like humans. And that's what Ingo Swann refers to there. So. Pretty interesting guy, this Ingo Swann, and the thing that got me the most is that he's the one who said that there was rings around Jupiter before NASA discovered it.
That's amazing.
And this is a guy that worked for the government for a long time.
And they gave him coordinates. He had no idea where they were sending him.
They would just give him coordinates.
Coordinates, what are they, as opposed to, the coordinates are based on what? It's not lat long, so... You mean space has coordinates?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I'm not sure how the coordinates work for Jupiter, but they basically gave him something and said, hey, take a look at this, and all of a sudden he's on Jupiter. Same thing for the moon, or when he was spying on the Soviet Union and trying to do all that stuff. Pretty wild stuff, Karen. It is.
I love this because, you see, Stephen has been documenting all these weird stories for years and years and years. And he has a whole list of them, and he never knew what, he just wrote them down. He didn't have a purpose. And
pretty
then
much.
Suddenly podcasts started, and then the United States government released some information about UFOs, and it's exploded, and now we have our podcast.
And we appreciate everybody who's been listening, and hopefully you're enjoying it. I mean, we see it growing, and it's growing exponentially, so appreciate you.
But it's mostly because, you've been studying this for so long, you're not going to hear this anywhere else. It's a compilation of things that you're not going to hear anywhere else because Stephen's been researching this for so long, and now it's come to fruition.
It is pretty wild.
Now we can dig into it.
Yeah, it's a pretty unique combination.
It's fun.
Thank you. Yeah. It is fun. We always have a lot of fun. Hopefully you have fun listening.
Yeah.
You can always do it at 850WFTL.com, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. You can rate us with 5 extraterrestrial stars,
please,
as we like to say. And also tune in next time.
Oh, yeah. What are we talking about next time?
Oh, it's part 2 of our moon series.
Wait, it's part 2 of our season 3.
That's correct. Episode 2, part 2 of season 3, next time on UAP, because we're going back into more stories of people like Carl Wolf, who worked for the Air Force and said that he saw the pictures of the structures on the moon and what happened to him later on as well.
Whoa.
Not to mention the lost transcripts, Karen. This is what I've been waiting to get to.
Oh, this is fun.
For weeks and weeks and weeks, I've been waiting to get to this one part that we're going to do next week.
So some ham operator heard this conversation from the moon?
Yes.
When they switched channels?
That's right. Apparently, the lost audio from the Apollo 11 mission, when Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong switched the medical channel, what was being said? What did they see? And audio from Buzz Aldrin himself,
who
talked about seeing a UFO.
On the moon.
Yes. On the way to the moon, anyway.
Oh.
Oh, I can't wait to get into all this. But part two is going to be...
Do we have the audio?
We sure do.
Oh, yay.
Part two is going to be fantastic next week. Don't miss that. And make sure, again, if you missed any other episodes previously, you can always find them at 850WFTL.com or wherever you get your podcasts. It's the Unidentified Alien Podcast. Stephen Diener right here. Karen Curtis over there. We'll talk to you again next time.
Thanks.